thanks for joining us for another podcast episode. As always, I'm Nick Mamarisa, CM Alliance, the Liquid Storyteller. Joined tonight by Cal Goodman, the GM of Frederick Winehouse. Cal, want to say hi to the folks.
Thanks for having us, Nick.
And our special guest tonight is Martin Lux from Chateau Femme, one of my all-time favorite wineries from Cahors. For those of you not familiar with Cahors, you are in for a very special treat because a lot of people out there that love wine are familiar with Malbec, but a surprising number of people don't realize where it actually comes from. The introduction to Malbec was Argentinian Malbec. It still remains, back me up here, Pascal, a big seller for everyone that comes into the store.
Phenomenal. I'd have to pull my numbers to give you direct amounts, but I can tell you just from intuition, quite well.
And that's going on for about 20 years now that everybody has been really big on the Malbec train. But for me, one of my favorite things is taking all these people that have had a Catena or any of the other Luigi Bosco famous Malbec producer from Argentina and bringing them back home to the motherland of the grape where it was born, where it still thrives, where, again, it bucks the trend of Bordeaux blends as Malbec is a supporting character, never the star of the show. And hey, it's my absolute pleasure to introduce Martin, a good friend of ours for a while now, and all those delicious wines. Martin, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Nick. Thank you. I'm very happy and proud to be invited at your podcast.
Martin, tell us a little bit about how you came to be at Chateau Femme. Then let's go from there. We'll maybe try some wine tonight.
You can always whine about it. I'll never complain. Yeah.
Okay. So, yes, my dad was a wine importer in Belgium until the end of the 90s. And then I decided together with my mom to buy a winery in Cahors, about 600, 700 miles away from Belgium, from where we were. And so he tried. He said, I'm going to make my own wine. And he fell in love with the region of Cahors, the grapes. Of course, the Malbec, as Nick explained already, and just the whole family went over there, and it's now a total family story because the name Chateau Femme, the name Femme is the family name of my mother. So,
and how big is the family now? How many people are down on the farm?
We are in total working with 10 people on the winery, and from the 10, there are 6 of the family.
Now, I hear a rumor that there are a few apples that are on the farm, as well as people that are in love with making grapes.
Yes, we have 2 donkeys, a pony, and some dogs. So if you will ever get a chance to come over and see us, you can have walks in the vineyards all over and on the donkeys for the smaller kids or next to the donkey for bigger people.
Fantastic. Martin, how big are we talking here as far as hectares?
I can say in French, of course, in 35 hectare, what means I think about 85 acres or something. So it's a middle winery in the Cahors.
And is all your fruit grown by yourself, all estate fruit? Do you have a little that's contract, or does it depend on the wine we're making?
It depends on the wine we're making, but most of them are all own produced, own grown grapes.
I know state fruit has always been one of those things that is tracking high digits. Just that guarantee that the person that's making the wine is growing the grapes, taking charge of everything, so they know from birth to bottle what's going on with that particular grape. Overall, Martin, how many wines do you produce at Chateau Femme?
We produce about a little bit over 10 different cuvées, and I want just to come back on what Nick's saying. So if you have a French wine and you have the word Chateau on the bottle, that means it's always from proper production, own grapes. So you cannot put any other source grapes or other grapes in that bottle. So that is really a protection that is very, very strict following it in France and the government, that you cannot do anything what you want if you have Chateau wine.
Cal, I think we have our first buyer tip and thing to remember for everybody that comes into Frederick Winehouse, yeah, or any other wine store for that matter. When you're looking for wine, look for something that says Chateau.
Lord knows it's never steered me wrong.
So, Martin, without further ado, I know that the 2000s have been up and down as far as vintages go for a lot of friends, but it seems like you have been able to ride out these very different weather circumstances and always consistently produce just solid wines year after year, no matter what Mother Nature throws at you. Any hints that you have to maybe everybody else have? What is the secret of your success?
I think the secret is that we have had some years that were really not as good as other years, as we do a natural product. And so in those years, I decide often to take the best parcels and bring them back to the middle cuvée. So those years we don't make our top cuvées, and we use those grapes to put them in the cuvée, just below it. So that makes it very consistent and good quality each year.
All right. Well, Cal, if you're up for it, I think we should try some more.
I'd love to.
Martin, tell us about the first Friday.
Wine we're going to drink today. So yeah, we're going to have two flights. I'm presenting our house wines, the white, rosé, and red. Easy drinking wines that are made for that in stainless steel vinification. So we start with the Côte de Gascogne. That's a little bit more south of Cahors. White, so we have three grapes, Sauvignon Blanc, Uni Blanc, and Colombard. It's a really crispy wine that you can have all day long, especially when it's getting a little bit hotter. You have nice lemon, grapefruit, just a wine you can enjoy every day.
Sir.
Here you go. So I think immediately in the notes you can have those grapefruit, lemony, crispy aromas that are coming through.
Yeah, absolutely. It's beautiful combination of citrus fruits, as well as a little bit of green, but not strongly herbal, but just really fresh.
You're a nice spring morning.
But not.
You get that zesty melon on the nose.
As Martin said, that is incredibly ridiculous and easy to drink. So, right, I love that there is acidity in there in the same way that, you know, you add squeeze a lemon or squeeze a lime to a cocktail or just, over
zesty
food. Yep. Grains, really the whole entire wine right up.
What would we pair it with?
Sunny days, poolside.
I was thinking more in terms of Epicurean, but love that too.
I really think that this is a super versatile wine. I think this comes as what you want a house wine to do. It's a white wine that is good for drinking on its own, but at the same time, if we want to pair it up with food, I can easily see this with multiple types of seafood, chilled seafood, your shrimp, any type of salad, as I said. But the wonderful crisp flavors that it has, I don't think would fight with a lot of herby dishes either. So you have that friend that is always pulling fresh herbs out of the garden or the windowsill to put in a dish. I think that's what it's calling for. Give me something else to buttress the freshness of whatever you're playing around with. It's really well done. I love that. So it's I'm guessing that we get most of the citrus and the pop from the Sauvignon, the minerality from the Uni Blanc, and then that little bit of fleshiness that it has, that would be the Colombard coming through.
Yes, that's exactly, you're right on that. Yeah. And we use a third of each, so it's really, really, the purpose of making those wines is really easy drinking all day wines, and that's really the purpose of those kind of wines. Yeah.
Wonderful.
I love that sour note that bookends. Right off the bat,
it's palate.
Okay, what's next, Martin?
So next we go over to the grape we were talking about before, the Malbec, but the Malbec Rosé. So this Malbec Rosé is a saignée, so it means we bleed the juice out of the skins after 6 hours that they've been together. So we leave the skins, the juice 6 hours on the skins, and then we take the juice away. So this makes a dry rosé, but you have everything in this. Fruit, fat, little nice fat you want to find in the wine, tart,
strawberry, a lot of red fruit that you just crushed. So this is a rosé for me. It's very, very all around. You can go from aperitif to dessert, or with a Caesar chicken salad or salmon. There's so many stuff to do with this wine, and I really love this wine. It's also a very nice color, and it's different from the Provence rosé or other rosés, because you have things going on in it. It's a strong grape Malbec, so if you keep the juice for 6 hours with the skins, you have really a profile of more than a very light, crispy rosé. There's more going on. I think seeing the expressions on their faces of Nick and Kyle, that they agree. They totally agree with me.
Martin, help me out here. I know a lot of people are familiar with Provence rosé, the usual suspects, Grenache and Syrah, and again, a lot of the other grapes from around that area. But Malbec, don't see a lot of Malbecs produced as rosés. This seems a really fun thing. Are there a lot of other producers around Cabourg that are doing this, or is this still kind of a minority thing?
Yes, most producers around Cahors produce rosé, but it's not in the appellation, because in 1971, when Cahors had its appellation allowed, we could only make a red appellation. So if you find rosé, it will be under the name IGP Côte du Lot. So again, a little story on this wine. It's called Chevalier Famaille. And not Chateau Famaille, because if you want, again, to be Chateau, you have to be, of course, the owner of the vines and make your own wine, but it only has appellation on Chateau wines and not on Chevalier. Chevalier is for the IGP. We could not call this wine Chateau.
Well, I'm okay with that. I call it delicious.
It's light, it's subtle. Yeah. What is that on the finish? There's almost a hint of sweetness.
It's this combination for me of both sweetness and savoriness, like a concentrated fruit aspect, but there is
has a richness to it.
There's almost this little spice. It's not quite a tannin, but it is that little really comfortable dryness that just lingers over lager. Yeah. I really think this is, I'm not going to call it an aggressive rosé, but this is a big rosé. And even though it's not heavy and weighty or anything else, it's big on flavor, it's big on body, it's big on spice. It's really impressive when you compare it to the hundreds and hundreds of perfumey and flowery rosés. Definitely not that. Again, part 10, fantastically well done.
Yeah, thank you. And I just wanted to also a little bit to come back on often I get the questions when I host tastings, or people like, is your rosé fruity? And then I say, what are you looking for? Are you looking for something with sugar that is sweet, or do you want fruit? So my answer to Kyle was asking for something at what is at the end of the mouthfeel. It is fruit without being sweet.
I think that's one of the big issues that we run into in describing wines. You know, it's easy for us to talk about a lot of different wines because we, be honest here, we drink a lot of wines every single week, every single month. We're going through a lot more than the average consumer. And the difference that we try to flesh out for a lot of people is, are you looking for something that is sweet, or do you want something that's juicy or fruity? And those three words are not synonymous. There are very different distinctions when you're talking about making wine. Yeah. It's great to have a wine with a lot of juicy character. Sometimes freshness comes along with that. And again, if you want something that is fruity, depending on the grape selection, when you harvest it, you know, you can bring out more of the fruitiness. But I think that this sweet thing is often confused for those other two concepts, much to the detriment of people experiencing a really tasty, delicious bottle of wine.
Oh, yeah. No, it's very light, cuts up the palate nicely, and then you get all that flavor once it hits the soft palate, and just explosion of fruit. That's lovely. Absolutely lovely.
All right, two for two, Martin. Where do we head to next?
Okay, so we go to the last wine of the first flight, but it's also a wine that will be introducing the next flight. So we go all over now to 100% red Malbec, all coming from the estate. So it's all Famaille wine from proper production or proper vineyards. And it's all a story about now of terroir and winemaking, and how do we make this kind of wine on this kind of terroir with the at least possible hand of the winemaker, because nature has to speak. We start with 100% Malbec. Coming from the first terrace next to the Lot River. So we are based in the valley of the Lot River, And we work on terraces next to that river. So the first terraces have a sandy soil and also, as you can understand, easy access to water. So we overgrow a little bit those vines. They grow more grapes than allowed for Cahors, because this is also an IGP Côte du Lot. But as we produce more juice, we have more juicy, easy drinking wines, and it makes it approachable for everybody. Stainless steel vinification and then bottling quickly after to keep rid of the freshness and the very easy drinking Malbec out of Cahors.
So, Martin, are you harvesting these Malbec grapes all at the same time, or for the individual bottles, do you have different harvesting rates?
Yes, as we want to, we do different dates because we want to bring on this wine, as I said, more freshness, more more fruit, and so we harvest this at least a week before the other Malbecs.
So, Cal, any thoughts on this one? And I know for me, right off the bat, I get that really rich, unctuous, juicy nose, and it certainly delivers the moment I get that first sip on the attack, too. Ooh,
very much so. Nice and inky.
It's solid. Very much so. That wine.
Stays consistent the entire time. Yeah.
And I think, definitely you see a brightness to the wine. There's not a lot of weight to it as far as that intense, dry tannic finish to it. You get some tannins from the grape itself, but it's not overbearing.
No, not at all.
It's not sharp. We're not getting any of that witsiness on the jawline and the jawbones that you sometimes get it. Yeah, really. For me, the first sip of this wine, it's screaming barbecue to me.
Yeah.
I want to grill something.
Coats the palate nicely, stays very inky, consistent throughout, but yeah, it would pair nicely with it.
At the same time, I wouldn't be opposed if you ever brought this for chili. You know, give me something that's got that kind of slow, concentrated flavor, and then give me something like this where it's got a little spice and a little warmth to it. It's not on the heavy side, so very complimentary when you have that juiciness to come through. Like your meatiness of a traditional firehouse chili.
I always stumbled into, I kid you not, I would always use a South African Shiraz anytime I was having chili. Now,
I'm not going to argue with that choice. Yeah.
Just, I play it safe at times.
So, Martin, you said this is the start of our journey into Malbec. Was this one of the first wines that you then made when you were playing around with Malbecs, or where did we go when you first came
out? No, we first of all, this is soil where we can make Cahors and where we're allowed to make Cahors wines. But we find out on a proper experience that these terroirs next to this river make much more lighter, easier drinking wines. And that's why we decided to change it over to IGP Côte du Lot, and we harvest about 8,500 liters per hectare on this wine. So in Cahors, we can only go to 50. So hectoliters, so 5,000 liters. So we go over what is allowed for Cahors, and we do it on purpose because really the soil is made for it, and the vines go get the water next in the river, and they grow grapes, and you can see them. They're so happy to have that the water and to grow the grapes. So this is the wine that should be made on this terroir.
So what I hear is you're breaking the rules to make wine for us and make better wine for everyone. I'm okay with that.
Layman's terms? No. Yeah. Modern-day Kennedy approach, give the people what they want.
Martin, that's beautiful. So from here, I imagine we're going to play around and introduce a little more oak, or do you have anything else up your sleeve?
I said it was the last wine of the first flight because it's all in IGP, and now we go really over to the Cahors wines. And I have to be honest with you, Nick, I just changed a bottle because I want Kyle, and you know, of course, the wines already, but Kyle to present... First of all, the most classic wines we make in Cahors, and we go over to the second terrace, so we have already more clay in the terroir, and so the yield goes under 50 hectoliters per hectare, so we have natural, much more concentration, so what we do with the pruning is done more severely, so we cut more grapes, or the potential of grapes that can come out, so the vine concentrated really on less grapes, so we have much more concentration. This wine has a skin contact for 3 weeks. So the juice stay together with the skins for 3 weeks while the fermentation is going on. And after all that's done,
So the vinification is over. This wine goes for 18 months in oak barrels, second and third use. I don't want to use new barrels in this wine because it's not strong enough. It's concentrated. It is with a nice complexity, but it can use that little touch of oak that will bring to a Cahors how they should be, I think, with a nice acidity, nice fruit, very good balance between this fruit, the acidity, the spices, and a little touch of oak.
So, Martin, I want to reach back to a thing that you alluded to. So this second terrace, the second cut, significantly different as far as altitude goes. Obviously, it's farther away from the river, but there are clay soils, slightly higher altitude.
Yeah, it is a slightly higher altitude, but it's not. You cannot imagine on a picture when you're in the mountains. It's really, really slowly going up, and you have to. If you want to understand, you have to, again, come to Cahors and go to the Lot River and start walking on those first terraces. And then you walk a little bit up, a little bit up, a little bit up, and you will start seeing the soil is changing and getting more clay. And the ground, if it's wet, it will stick on your shoes, you know. It's totally different. And the terroir changes, so we think also we need to make other wines on this. And this is the real Cahors. But we have a very... in Cahors, we have very strong history with making very tannic and powerful wines. The way we now do winemaking is much more modern, so we make wines that are accessible very young and still have their tannins, still have a lot of color, but they are approachable from the younger years, and you can drink them the day they're bottled, the day after you can start, but you can also sell them for 10 years at least.
So just for those of you listening along at home, we are enjoying the Chateau Femme Cuvée Prestige. Wow. I feel like I'm going to overuse that word a lot today.
No, it's lovely. Nice and bold. Honestly, on the nose, you just get that dark berry that's clear and apparent. It's lovely. It's almost kind of initially like a barnyard kind of smell, like just good dirty soil and just dark berry. It's lovely.
I second you on that yeah. Dark berry, crushed berry concentration.
Oh, yeah.
It's somewhere between a fresh blackberry and a cooked berry that you get out of pie, where it gets that added layer of richness and unctuousness to it. I think that there's a beautiful spice note.
Oh, that's, you definitely get that oak.
Yeah.
And that nice subtle, almost like a cream of vanilla finish. Yeah,
yeah, but it's not, again, it's not heavily oaked.
It's really beautifully balanced. Yeah.
So in part, I'm going to guess, to restate an obvious thing. So when we're dealing with American oak is always this loose, soft grain that's really, really overgiving, if you will. Not unlike Americans. We're loud when we're in a room and we make ourselves notice.
Whereas what are you talking about?
The French oak here, that tighter, looser grain, and going second and third barrels allows it to be a little more refined tannins without giving it that big, dry finish to it. I mean, it's definitely crisp and dry at the end, but it's really well
done.
Martin, for those of us that are an American, somehow find a way to keep ourselves from opening that bottle of wine that we purchased an hour ago at the wine store. What would you say the aging potential on this one is?
As I said, I think you can drink it now, but you can certainly get better in 2 years and then stay on the same quality level for 5 years more. And then maybe you'll lose some fruit, but you'll go more to some mushroom taste or aromas that you can find in a wet forest when you're walking over there. If you like those kind of wines, you can wait for several years and wait for that to come over. But the best, I always say, you have to buy, if you really want to know, you buy two cases of each wine. And you try.
Love that.
One bottle each 6 months. And then we see each other in a few years and we talk about that. And then you can tell yourself to me, when is the best moment to drink this wine?
All right, Cal, we have tip number two. If you are a fan of wine, particularly a fan of a single wine, go out and buy two cases of it so you can drink it every 6 months until it's all gone or until Martin comes back and says, drink it with me.
There's absolutely zero way. I cannot put aside biased on that. You know, clearly I have an agenda. Like I, you know, I have owners to answer to here at Frederick Winehouse. Naturally, I want people to fill their carts. You know, so you know, out of all potential bias, though, you know, I'm not just blowing smoke. I mean, Nick, you know me well enough. If I don't like a wine, I'm direct. I will flat out tell you, I'm not a fan. But honestly, you know, I don't think you've ever recommended a bad wine to me.
Well, Cal, I'm just going to tell you, I'm looking forward to explain to Gary and the rest of the powers that may be of our new 2K sale for everybody.
Anytime a winemaker's here, there's a 2K minimum. Yeah, yeah. Especially when they bring juice like this.
All right, so Cuvée Prestige, diving into the world of Malbec, significantly more aggressive, more layered, more going on in this wine than the Chevalier de Fame Côte du Lac. But there's another gear, and there's another level of just ridiculousness that you've brought for us, isn't there, Martin?
Yes, we're at the 2018 Cuvée X. Cuvée X means our top wine from our top partial. So you walk from the first to the second terraces to meet the prestige, but then you go higher up and you will meet some gravel and limestone. And that's the perfect soil to make more stronger wines because the vines need so need to go, the roots of the vines need to go so much deeper to find water and to feed themselves. So this is naturally selection of less yield. So we go to 30 hectoliters in 1 hectare. We handpicked those grapes, and then they go for 1 month on a skin contact. And after that, when the vinification is done, it's 2 years in only new French oak. So yeah. Let's. I want to have a reaction on Carl and Nick, and then I will come back with some other, more very important information on this way of winemaking.
Well, the first thing that gets me
is
you can tell this is a more serious wine.
Very much so.
By the significantly darker, inky, midnight blue, black, red color that this wine has. It is, it's not blood red, but it's got that really, really deep, full concentrated color to it. It's beyond crushed velvet, and it's darker than those old velvet curtains and everything else that used to be all the rage. This looks like a seriously, really intense, beautiful glass of velvet. Nose wise,
very deep. You get that note, that hint of cranberry, very deep.
Again, there's a warm spice.
Very
it's,
much so.
It's not quite cinnamony. It's definitely the kind of hearth, fireplace type spices that are is leaping out. There's a little bit of pepper in it. I guess if you said it was a milder version of like a Chinese five spice, I get all sorts of really wonderful warmth break out of glass when you swirl around.
Yeah. Frankly, I'd pair that with salted pork. Yeah, I'd pair that with some kind of
salted
pork.
And let's just make that our third Frederick Winehouse tip of the day. Yeah. When having a ridiculous, delicious, concentrated, beautiful, big red, it's time to bring out the pork.
So yeah, I wanted to come back a little bit on those on the oak aging. The previous one, as I told you, second and third use. So this means that the barrels were already used for another wine, and it's possible to put the previous wine on new oak. But for me, it will be over oaked. So too much oak, and the oak will be overwhelming the fruit and the character of this wine. So the last wine has so much character, so much stuff going on, so much complexity that he will harmonize or get married with the wood, with the oak barrels to be really a perfect couple. And they go for many, many years together, and they will grow up together, and they will cellar together, and you can drink them now, but you can wait for 5 years, 10 years. And we're on the 2018 vintage now, so this wine is already 5 years old. But you should drink it without knowing that. You could even say, this is very, very young. So much potential to cellar. We tasted 2001 and 2002 vintage not long ago, and they were still very good on the fruit.
So, Martin, to just go back and touch on barrels, we're talking traditional size barrels, not the giant 500 liters or anything else?
No, yeah, it's traditional barrique bordelaise. So barrique from Bordeaux are 225 liters. And if you make a quick calculation on that, it means 300 bottles from each barrel.
And how many bottles of this did we make, or how much was the production?
As I said before, we only make this the best years, but
as we had very many, many good years last time. So it's almost each year between 6 and 8 hours.